Brettleby. Brettleby was a Georgian house with Corinthian pillars, standing among the green hills. In front there was a lawn, a few trees, and some fish ponds leading down to the silent park. At the back were trees among which were the stables and the big kitchen garden. It was a very quiet place, some miles from the high road. Recently, Hermione had lived a good deal at the house. She had turned away from London and Oxford to the silence of the country. Her father was mostly absent abroad, and she was often at the house with her visitors. The summer was just coming in when Ursula and Gudrun went to stay with Hermione. Coming in the car, after they had entered the park, they looked across at the house. There were small figures on the green lawn, women in lavender and yellow, moving to the shade of the enormous cedar tree. "Isn't it beautiful?" said Gudrun, a little resentfully, as if she admired it against her will. The car stopped outside, and a maid appeared, and then Hermione, coming forward with her pale face lifted and her hands outstretched, her voice singing, "Here you are! I'm so glad to see you." She kissed Gudrun. "So glad to see you." She kissed Ursula and remained with her arm around her. "Are you very tired?" "Not at all," said Ursula. "Are you tired, Gudrun?" "Not at all, thanks." Hermione stood looking at them. The girls were embarrassed because she did not move into the house, but had her little scene of welcome there on the path. The servants waited. "You would like to go up to your rooms, wouldn't you? Let's go up, shall we?" Ursula was glad when she was finally alone in her room. Hermione was so slow and was pressing herself upon her in a way that was both embarrassing and oppressive. Lunch was served on the lawn under the cedar tree. There was a young Italian woman, slim, fashionable, a young and athletic-looking Miss Bradley, a learned baronet of 50, who was always making jokes and laughing at them heartily. There was Rupert Birkin, and then a woman secretary, Fräulein Mars, young, slim, and pretty. The food was very good. Gudrun, critical of everything, gave it her full approval. Ursula liked the white table by the great tree, the scent of new sunshine, the green park with far-off deer feeding peacefully. But in spirit, she was unhappy. The atmosphere was very intellectual and very tiring. Birkin looked depressed. Hermione, with amazing persistence, tried to ridicule him and make him look stupid in the eyes of the others. And it was surprising how she seemed to succeed, how helpless he seemed against her. Suddenly there was the sound of a motor car. "There's Alexander," sang Hermione, and laying down her coffee cup, she rose and disappeared round some bushes. "Who is it?" asked Gudrun. "Alexander, her brother," said the little Italian woman. They all waited, and then around the bushes came Alexander Roddus, and behind him Hermione, arm in arm with Gerald Critch, who had come with Alexander. Hermione presented Gerald to everyone and then led him away to sit by her. He was evidently her honorable guest. Alexander was a member of Parliament, and he brought news that the Minister for Education had resigned because of strong criticism. This started a conversation on education. "Of course," said Hermione, lifting her face ecstatically, "there can be no reason, no excuse for education, except the joy and beauty of knowledge in itself." She seemed to rumble with her thoughts for a moment, then she continued, "Vocational education isn't education. It is the end of education." Gerald, listening to the discussion, sniffed the air with delight and prepared for action. "Not necessarily," he said. "Isn't education really like gymnastics? Isn't the aim of education the production of a well-trained, energetic mind? Just as athletics produce a healthy body, cried Miss Bradley in hearty agreement. Well, rumbled Hermione, I don't know. To me the pleasure of knowing is so great, so wonderful. Nothing has meant so much to me in all my life. Nothing. What knowledge, for example, Hermione? Asked Alexander. I don't know. But one thing was the stars, when I really understood something about the stars. One feels so uplifted, so free. What do you want to feel free for? Said Birkin sarcastically. You don't want to be free. Hermione was offended. Yes, I do, she said. It's like getting on top of the mountain and seeing the Pacific Ocean. Yes, it is the greatest thing in life, to know. It is really to be happy, to be free. And then, to the amazement of everybody, the maid came with a large tea tray. The afternoon had passed so quickly. After tea, they decided to go for a walk. Would you like to come for a walk? Asked Hermione each of them, and they all said yes, feeling like prisoners being taken for exercise. Will you come for a walk, Rupert? No, Hermione. Why not? It made her angry. She wanted them all to go for a walk with her. Because I don't like going off in a big company. Then we'll leave the little boy behind if he's in a bad mood. And she looked really happy while she insulted him. She laughed as she walked off with the others. Goodbye, little boy. Goodbye. Goodbye, impudent witch, he said to himself. When they arrived back after their walk, Hermione went straight to find Birkin in his room. She went slowly up the stairs and along the corridor, singing out, Rupert! Rupert! She came to his door and tapped. Rupert! Yes, came the voice at last. What are you doing? He opened the door. We've seen the daffodils. They are so beautiful. I know, I've seen them, he answered. Have you? And she remained looking at him. It stimulated her above all things, this conflict with him. But underneath, she knew the separation was coming, and her hatred of him was subconscious and intense. What were you doing? She asked again in a mild, indifferent tone. He did not answer, but she saw he had taken a Chinese drawing from the wall and was copying it with much skill. You are copying the drawing, she said. How beautifully you do it. You like it very much, don't you? It's a marvelous drawing, he said. The Chinese ambassador gave it to me. I know. But why are you copying it? I want to know it, he replied. One understands more about China by copying this drawing than by reading all the books. Hermione looked at him in silence for a long time, trying to see into his mind. It was an awful obsession in her to know everything he knew. Then at last she turned away and left him to dress for dinner. That evening Birkin went to bed early, but Gerald came and sat on his bed, wanting to talk to him. Who are those two Brangwyns? Gerald asked. They live in Beldover. In Beldover? Who are they, then? Teachers in the grammar school. Ah, yes, I thought I'd seen them before. It disappoints you? Asked Birkin. Disappoints me? No, but how is it Hermione has them here? She knew Gudrun in London. That's the younger one. She's an artist. Does sculpture. She's not a teacher, then, only the other one. Both. Gudrun is art mistress. Ursula is a class mistress. And what's the father? Handicraft instructor in the schools. Really? I don't suppose you will see much of Gudrun, Birkin went on. She's a restless bird. She'll be off somewhere abroad soon. How do you know her so well? I knew her in London. She knows Pussum and the others, although she wasn't really part of that group. She is more conventional, in a way. Does she make money from her sculptures?
Are they good?
I think sometimes they are marvelously good. Those two birds in Hermione's boudoir are hers. I think they're rather wonderful.
She might be a well-known artist one day.
She might, but I think she won't. She drops her art if anything else fascinates her.
Gerald went silent for a while thinking, and then slowly wandered to his room.
Gerald and Birkin were the last to come down to breakfast. Hermione liked everybody to be early. She suffered when she felt her day had been made shorter. Afterwards, Birkin went to find her in her boudoir. He had been a little rude to her, and he wanted to make peace. He wanted to be on good terms with her again. She was writing letters as he went into her room. She lifted her face as he entered, and then looked down again at her paper, but she could not go back to her writing. He took a book and sat down at the table with his back to her, but her mind was in chaos now that he was there, and she could not concentrate. Suddenly she realized that his presence was a wall, destroying her, and that, unless she broke down the wall, she might die. A terrible shock ran over her body, like shocks of electricity, as if many volts of electricity suddenly struck her down. She suddenly felt delightfully strong. Her hand closed on a beautiful blue ball of lapis lazuli that stood on her desk for a paperweight. She rolled it round in her hand as she rose silently. She moved towards him and stood behind him for a moment in ecstasy. He was asleep and completely unaware of her presence. Then, as quick as lightning, and with unspeakable satisfaction, she brought down the ball of stone on the back of his head. She brought it down with all her force, but her fingers were in the way and softened the blow. Nevertheless, down went his head, and she convulsed with ecstasy. She lifted her arm once more to smash the head that lay dazed on the table. She must smash it once and for all. But she was not quick. She could only move slowly. A strong instinct of survival woke in him, and he turned round to look at her. He saw the ball coming down again, and just in time covered his head with a cushion. Even so, the blow came down, almost breaking his neck. He was broken, but not afraid, and he twisted again and jumped up from the chair. "Stop, Hermione," he said. "I won't let you." And he walked out of the room, leaving her standing. Birkin, barely conscious, went out of the house and across the park to the hills. He was aware of the pain in his head becoming stronger every minute. He was walking now along the road to the station. It was raining and he had no hat. At the station he wrote a note to Hermione. "I will go to town. I don't want to come back to Brettleby for the present. It's quite all right. Don't worry about having hit me. Tell the others it's just one of my moods. You were quite right to hit me, because I know you wanted to. So there's the end of it." In the train, however, he felt sick. He dragged himself from the station to a cab, feeling his way step by step, like a blind man, and held up only by a weak will. For a week or two he was ill, but he did not let Hermione know about himself. There was a complete estrangement between them.